Today we read from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 9, which is titled Detachment from All, that is Material. Detachment from All, that is Material. We'll be reading two verses today, verse number 3 and verse number 4. But we'll be discussing these verses in the reverse sequence. We'll first discuss verse number 4 and then we'll discuss verse number 3. Because in verse number 4 we are going to have some philosophy and verse number 3 we are going to have a story. Since in the initial 10-15 minutes everyone is relatively more attentive than the later stages of the Bhagavatam, so at that time the philosophy can be given or unleashed. And then later on, when everyone is just dozing off, the time story can break and begin. So that's the reason we have swapped. So we'll read text number 3.
Name mana apmanosto.
Name mana apmanosto.
Chintagehaputrinam
Chintagehaputrinam
Atmasira Atmarati
Atmasira Atmarati
Vicharami Sapalava
Vicharami Sapalava.
Na
no.
Not
no.
Me.
Me.
Sorry, me.
Me.
In me.
In me.
Mana.
Mana.
Honor.
Honor.
Apamano.
Apamano.
Dishonor.
Dishonor.
Ta. Exist.
Exist.
Na.
Na.
There is not.
There is not.
Chinta.
Chinta.
Anxiety.
Anxiety.
Geha.
Geha.
Of those who have a home.
Of those who have a home.
Putrinam.
Putrinam.
And children.
And children.
Atma.
Atma.
By the self.
By the self.
Krida.
Krida.
Sporting.
Sporting.
Atma.
Atma.
In the self alone.
In the self alone.
Rati.
Rati.
Enjoying.
Enjoying.
Vicharami.
Vicharami.
I wonder.
I wonder.
Iha.
Iha.
In this world.
In this world.
Balavat.
Balavat.
Like a child.
Like a child.
Translation. In family life, the parents are always in anxiety about their home, children, and reputation. In family life, the parents are always in anxiety about their home, children, and reputation. But I have nothing to do with these things. I do not worry at all about my family, and I do not care about honor and dishonor. I enjoy only the life of the soul, and I find love on the spiritual platform. Thus, I wander the earth like a child. The next verse, text 4, the translation, I believe that's also written here.
Yeah, okay.
Translation of text 4. In this world, two types of people are free from all anxiety and merge in great happiness. In this world, two types of people are free from all anxiety and merge in great happiness. One who is retarded and childish fool, and one who has approached the Supreme Lord, who is beyond the three modes of material nature. One who is retarded and childish fool, and one who has approached the Supreme Lord, who is beyond the three modes of material nature. Purport. Those who covertly seek material sense gratification are gradually pushed down into a miserable condition of life, because as soon as one even slightly violates the laws of nature, one must suffer sinful reactions. Thus, even materially alert and ambitious persons are constantly in anxiety and from time to time they are plunged into great misery. Those who are nonsensical and retarded, however, live in a fool's paradise, and those who have surrendered to Lord Krishna are filled with transcendental bliss. Therefore, both the fool and the devotee may be said to be peaceful, in the sense that they are free from the ordinary anxiety of the materially ambitious person. However, this does not mean that the devotee and the retarded fool are on the same platform. A fool's peace is like that of a dead stone. A fool's peace is like that of a dead stone. Whereas a devotee's satisfaction is based on perfect knowledge. A fool's peace is like that of a dead stone. Whereas a devotee's satisfaction is based on perfect knowledge.
Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Vidhanvanditam Tam Sativam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitam Cha He Krishna Varna Sindhu Dina Vandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namaste Sapta Kanta Gaurangi Radhe Vrinda Vaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Rupyacha Upaka Mutya Devacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vatsali Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
higher philosophy. It says that there are two types of people who are there in the world. One is, and both are free from anxiety and merged in happiness, but one is retarded and one is childish fool. Okay. However, the difference between the happiness of the mentally retarded person and that of the Krishna conscious person is differentiated here. So, we'll discuss about what is this difference, or in other words, what is real happiness of the devotee and what is the false happiness of the people who supposedly think that they are happy. Is it clear? So Srila Prabhupada was once asked this question by a reporter. A lot of people, so many people were there, Prabhupada was approached. He said, the reporter asked Srila Prabhupada, Swamiji, you speak about this world, you speak about this creation, you speak about Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and so on and so forth. But tell me one, answer one question of mine. Why has your Krishna created this world? And Srila Prabhupada immediately replied, for enjoyment. And all the devotees there were dumbfounded. Srila Prabhupada is saying, material world, enjoyment? Then after a small gap, Srila Prabhupada said,
when the reporter was actually beaming, you know, he was very happy. Yes, I am correct. Then Srila Prabhupada said, not yours, Krishna's. So, Srila Prabhupada gave this message, you know, quite a bit of message in just one word. In his books also, Srila Prabhupada has emphasized repeatedly that we are not against enjoyments. Devotees are not sadists or nirashavadis, what they call in Hindi. What is the right word for that in English? I don't know. But always sulking. So devotees do enjoy. But the kind of enjoyment that we are talking about here is enjoyment with a certain class. Not cheap enjoyment. By now we all know that we are spirit souls. No suspense in that. And we all know that at the end of the day, the spirit soul is Anandamaya Dhyasa. Which means the spirit soul is always seeking pleasure and happiness. By default, that is a characteristic of the spirit soul. So everybody is seeking this pleasure. However, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, the pleasure seeking tendency that we have is misdirected. And that is the problem. So therefore, we find in this material world that there are different grades of seeking pleasure. And in the first half, we will spend some time talking about the different grades of this pleasure. In the Shastras, it is mentioned that the lowest level of pleasure, item number one, the lowest level of pleasure is called as a sensual pleasure, which means the pleasure which is obtained by contact of the senses with the sense objects. This is considered the most prominent pleasure in modern society. But the problem is, such pleasure is temporary and it gives a lot of distress. This pleasure begins in a very nice way, but then ends up always in disaster. That is the pleasure of the senses, pleasure derived from senses. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 18, text number 38, the last chapter, there is a verse which many of you must be knowing. It's called Vishayendriya Samyogad Yat Tat Agre Amrutopamam Pariname Vishamiva Tat Sukham Rajasam Smritam. Vishayendriya. Vishaya means the sense objects, and Indriya means the senses. Vishayendriya Samyogad, when these two come together, Agre Amrutopamam. It's initially like amrit or nectar, but pariname is visham eva. Visham means poison. Towards the end it is poison. And such pleasure is the forte of people who are in the mode of passion, rajasam. The translation is that happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects and which appears like nectar at first, but poison at the end, is said to be of the nature of mode of passion. So this is the first pleasure, sense pleasure. And modern society is infatuated with this kind of a sense pleasure. We see advertisements and billboards everywhere, all around town, requesting the consumer, please indulge, please enjoy in these products, you need them. But according to the standard of the Gita, this pleasure is always mixed with distress. Like yesterday, Narottam Prabhu was saying, it's like sweet rice mixed with sand. So this is the first level of pleasure, sense pleasure. The second level of pleasure, which is higher than this sense pleasure of the gross senses, is the mental pleasure. That is number two. Or pleasure that is derived from the mind. The first one was pleasure which is derived by contact of the senses with the sense object. The second one is pleasure which is derived from the mind. Now, there are various types of people who indulge in this mind pleasure. Most famous is the poets of today. These poets, they are always looking for an audience, if you see, to unleash their poetry. They just have to find one bakra, in Hindi we say, one guinea pig, that's all. Then they will make him sit and they will start giving poetry to that person. They just need a captive audience. And the people who are interested in creating these so-called poetry, the so-called composers of the world, these people are so lost in their creative pursuit that they completely forget even their gross bodily needs. It is not uncommon to find a great poet who is singing great poetry, but if you look at him, he will be generally very unkempt. It's not surprising. And if you ask him, he says, no, anyway, what is the use of this body? Everything is subtle. So he's operating at a slightly higher level than the sensual, the gross sensual filter. This is the mental frame of mind. Now, many times, people take to poetry not only because they are interested in poetry, but they take to poetry because they have failed in life. And there is some frustration. And the whole of Hindi movies or Bollywood and Tollywood, Tamil movies or any movies runs on this principle. The hero is initially very handsome, the heroine is coming there and both are in love, parents are objecting. Finally, you know, the love, it culminates in the heroine marrying somebody else. Then the hero becomes, you know, Devdas, the big beard. You know, he stops eating, he starts drinking, but he's a nice man. But now he is doing poetry and the audience is sympathizing with the hero, saying, oh, this guy is nice, he deserves to be back. And by the end, the audience wants the movie to somehow end in the fact that, you know, they meet. And the poor husband of that heroine is nowhere because he's not the main heroine. So this is the mind tricking us. Completely, it's taking us through a very, very illusory journey all around the place, like that. Or the modern day intoxication of sports and games. That is another mind game which is there. So when people watch these games like cricket and footy, in fact, in our house we were doing nice Bhakti Rishabh program, but the neighbors complained and they told the body corporate that they complained saying that there is noise up there, it's disturbing our footy. And therefore the body corporate sent us a love letter saying that please stop your chanting and kirtan, please don't do home program. And the body corporate was very kind enough to give me a list of places where I can do the home program. Of course, based on a fee. So, tears are in my eyes, seeing their kind of compassion for me. But this is mode of fashion. People don't want to hear Harinam, but their kuti is getting disturbed. So, this is again at the level of the mind people are experiencing. Now, there's a small catch here. Now, why these people enjoy this kind of pleasure in kuti and cricket? It is said that the mind is identifying with something. The mind is identifying with Collingwood. The mind is identifying with Shane Kilda. And therefore, you somehow want that team to win for you. Otherwise, then life is not worth living. If you are putting it in losers. So, these people, everything is at the end of the day some upadhi or some false identification within the mind which makes us relish this kind of thing. This is not the absolute truth. How do we understand this is not the absolute truth? Let us take another person who is least interested in footy. Now if you put him and then he is also watching footy or football and there are 22 players running here and there, with one ball. This person may think, why so much of fight is going on? Everyone is pushing. Why not give everyone one ball? Everyone is happy. So this is his understanding of footy. So what one person is relishing so much, another person is completely detached and looking at it as if, you know, something is, as if how can someone relish this kind of a thing? Why? Because that person does, his mind does not identify with what is going on there. He is detached from what is going on in front of him. So therefore, this kind of mental pleasure is definitely higher than gross pleasure. But still, there is a higher pleasure than even this mental pleasure. That is the third stage. That is called as the intellectual pleasure. Or the pleasure which is experienced at the level of the intelligence. So gross sense pleasure, mind, and now we have come to pleasure from the intelligence. So we see a lot of people who are addicted to this kind of a pleasure. People who are generally interested in computers, problem solving, analytical ability. These are the kind of people who fall into this bucket. Because spiritual pleasure, unfortunately, takes a long time to manifest. There is a lot of hard work required to get spiritual pleasure. First we have to go through Saddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Anartha Nivritti, Nishtha, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava. Long way. But these kind of pleasures give immediate results. So we take the example of people who played chess. I have in my family, I have one of my cousin brother. His name is there. My cousin, his name is there in that Asia Dimka Book of Records or whatever. He is a great chess player. I was a child prodigy. So he was number one in Asia once upon a time. So I used to remember my cousin actually married him. That's how he became. He's my cousin's husband actually, in one sense. So I used to see, he used to sit in front of this table like that, the chessboard, and the coin is there. And there is another person sitting on the other side of the chess table. Both of them are not moving any coins, but they are just looking at the chessboard. Concentration. And this is not some 5 minutes, 10 minutes. This goes into hours. For hours, they are just observing, both of them. And then finally they may move one coin. Strategy. Right? I was thinking that if this kind of attention I had in my chanting, so much of attachment to that game, so much of concentration. When I sit down to chant, I have to move somewhere, my leg has to move, my hand has to move, my posture has to change, I have to walk in between, drink some water, so many things. But that chess player is completely absorbed in those pawns. This is because there is some kind of pleasure which is there, otherwise you cannot play such games. There is some pleasure in this austerity which is there, but that pleasure is at the level of the intelligence. So that is the third kind of pleasure. Then there is a fourth kind of pleasure, that is pleasure which comes from satisfying the ego or the false ego, one level higher than the intelligence. Pleasure of having achieved something in life. I am something, I have made it. So this is the fourth level of pleasure, and many of them are hankering after this in society. The problem with this pleasure is that there is lot of frustration and disappointment if you fail to achieve something, number one, or if you achieve something and then you lose everything. That is the problem with chasing this kind of pleasure. And people go into massive attacks of depression. Someone was saying that once somebody wanted to climb the Mount Everest. So this is some kind of a goal they keep, some achievement, some challenge. Okay. But it is explained that this is nothing but climbing the Mount Everest of one's own false ego. That is the Mount Everest at the end of the day, which manifests in an external Mount Everest. So the false ego is so high that it propels someone to do certain activities in the mode of passion and to derive the concomitant results that come from that. So in history, we have seen so many leaders, we have seen so many dictators who have succumbed to this kind of a thing. They had everything. They had beautiful women, so they could have always enjoyed the first level, which is the contact of sense with the sense objects. They could have enjoyed on the platform of the mind. They could have enjoyed on the platform of the intelligence. But still, they are not satisfied. They go out and try to conquer more and more and more and more. We know about Alexander. He was never satisfied with whatever he had. So this is the fourth level of pleasure that somebody enjoys. Which means a pleasure which comes out of the desire to manifest one's power. And the pleasure, and this pleasure is called as pleasure derived from the false ego. So we discussed four types of pleasures. One coming from the senses, one coming from the mind, one coming from the intelligence, and one coming from the false ego in the ascending order. Now, if we put some currency value to all these pleasures, let us say, in a hypothetical exercise, and if we put 15 cents for mental pleasure, and if we put 20 cents for intellectual pleasure, if we put 20 cents for the mind pleasure, 25 cents for the intellectual pleasure, and so on and so forth, and again 30 cents for the
false ego.
So we can go on putting this money value. But still, we have reached only 25 to 30 cents right now. Now if you go to a beggar on the road, and if you ask him, do you have any money? He'll just take his begging bowl and say, shh, shh, shh. Yes, he also has got money. That is the truth. It is the truth that he has got money. No doubt. There is some happiness is there with him. Right? But if you want to buy a house in Melbourne, Will you go to a beggar for housing loan? No, no, he has got money. Let me go to him. It's true, he's got money. Why? For the simple reason, he has got money, but that money is not adequate. He is not the most wealthiest person in this world. But he has got some money. So there is a truth which is here. That all these people who enjoy all these kinds of pleasure, starting with the sense pleasure, for example, pleasure coming out of sex, or any other type of mental, intellectual, egotistic pleasure, if we ask them, are you very happy in this world? They say yes, just like the beggar also said that I have some money. But strictly by definition, they are correct. But actually, that money is not the highest. Because the amount of money which they have is minuscule when it's compared to somebody who is having much more wealth. Therefore, as devotees, we are not interested in the pleasures of a few cents. But as devotees, we want unlimited pleasure. That is the difference here. If you see the translation. Normally, when you ask a person who is in his youth, when he goes to his teenage years, if you ask the person, what is the goal in life? What is your goal in life? If you ask a young person, invariably he will say that he wants to become Bill Gates or Larry Ellison, or he will say that I want to become the CEO of a company, or I want to become the greatest footy player that has ever been born. Essentially, we can categorize this as being wealthy and ambitious. Now, if you go to someone's house and now ask the child, what do you want to be? And the child says, no, I just want to be a beggar on the street. Suppose some child answers like this. Okay. Obviously, the parents of the child themselves will not be very happy with the child, because this is not a high ambition. So similarly, devotees are interested in higher pleasure. They are not interested in something which is cheap. Devotees are not interested in becoming beggars or vagabonds. Devotees want something which is long-lasting and which the happiness whose currency value is worth millions of dollars. Therefore, if the pleasure of the ego is worth 25 cents, then there is another level of pleasure which is not generally discussed in society. The pleasure of the devotees is not discussed in society. And information about this kind of pleasure, which is coming out of devotional service, is not even mentioned in the textbooks of the schools as well as the universities. And even whatever subject matter that is available is also so contaminated outside that people get frustrated after reading all this unbona fide literature, which supposedly is to take you beyond the false ego. But since it's unbona fide, people get frustrated and they say, forget it. Okay, let me just continue with my enjoyment in the material world. So this pleasure which we are talking about, which distinguishes the pleasure of the vagabond with that of the devotee, is the pleasure at the level of the soul, or what is called as the spiritual pleasure. And this pleasure is like obtaining millions of dollars. It's not worth 25 cents. So there are certain instructions in the Shastra called as Shastra Upadesh. Now this Shastra Upadesh is best understood with an example. Now, all of you are hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam class. After Srimad Bhagavatam class, what do we have? 9 a.m. Prasadam on top. So suppose I announce in this class saying that actually, you know, we have made chappan bhog. There is some samosa and cake and some pasta is there. There is some Mexican dish also. Suppose I mention all this. Casually I am just mentioning during the class. It's there. It's somewhere in one of the kitchens it's kept. Some gulab jamun and some carob chocolates. And then I just go away. I don't give any more information. Then at 9 a.m. when we get out of the room, where is the first place that normally, you know, a person will head towards? No guesses for that. So we know. Why this happens is because the instruction which was given itself is so attractive. The proposition is so attractive that one automatically will find a way. Ways and means of getting to the prasada, right? Similarly, the knowledge of spirituality is also like that. Information is given about the unlimited wealth and treasure which is available in Krishna consciousness. But the problem is, because we are in contact with the three modes of material nature, even though that treasure is inside our heart, All this wealth is inside our heart, we are not able to access it. And that is the reason we go out and seek pleasures which are temporary and which cause distress. In the Mahabharata, there is an interesting verse. It says, Ramante yogino anante satyanande chid atmani iti rama pade nasau param brahma abhidhiyate. The meaning of this verse is, the yogis are connoisseurs of pleasure. They do not go in for cheap pleasures. Because food items, for example, can be brought at $5 on a street stall also, and one can go to a 5-star hotel also and eat food. But if one has only $5 in the pocket, then simply because I have $5 doesn't mean I can eat in a 5-star hotel. Right? For $5 I will not even get entry into the 5-star hotel. What to speak about eating in the 5-star hotel. So devotees are highly ambitious. They don't go for the $5 pleasure. Rama, in this verse, which says, Satyanande chid atmani iti Rama. This Rama means there is an unlimited spiritual pleasure. Or this treasure is available to the devotees. Rama means an ocean of pleasure. So devotees are highly ambitious and therefore don't go for the lower 25 cent pleasure. They are ambitious for the pleasure worth millions of dollars. Therefore it is said, Ramante yogino anante. Devotees look for unlimited bliss and satya ananda, which is real bliss and not temporary pleasure. For example, if we have a nice plate of food, okay, and then I come and give very nice prasadam in your hand. But then I'll say, before you eat prasadam, just one message I wanted to give you. You lost your job. Please enjoy your prasadam. Suppose we give it. Then obviously, you're not going to enjoy that prasadam. Right? Or for example, if you are a student, suppose I come and give a nice prasadam to you, and then I said that, university results have come out. I have passed, I made it, I'm so happy, I wanted to give you a party out of love and affection for you. Please take this prasadam. Incidentally, you couldn't get through, but then you are not, despite all that pleasure in front of you, you are not going to able to enjoy that pleasure. Okay? So one cannot experience the taste, because the pleasure of this material world is relative and illusory, and that is the problem. Whereas devotees enjoy pleasure on the absolute platform. So somebody asked Srila Prabhupada one question. He said, Srila Prabhupada, you are saying that chanting Hare Krishna and all these processes, etc. Okay, you are doing so much of austerity, following four regulative principles, 16 rounds and so on and so forth. What if at the end of the life there is no Krishna? What if you realize at the end of the life there is no Krishna? Srila Prabhupada said that even if there is nobody called Krishna at the end of this whole lifetime, we realize that at least we have followed a very enjoyable process. We had a good time. We had bliss, we were very blissful, we had nice prasadam, we danced together, right? We worked together, we had nice kirtan, and so on and so forth. Nice association. At least we had a good time. And then Prabhupada paused and asked him, but what at the end of the lifetime, if you realize that there was Krishna? And that fellow just walked away. He didn't have any answer. So therefore, at this stage, most of us in a situation where we have to experience this higher pleasure, and that is the basis for practicing Krishna consciousness. In fact, in London, recently there was a study which revealed that the death rate of youth has increased by over 40% in the last 10 years. And when the reporter reported this, he mentioned there are three main causes for this, for the death rate increasing amongst youth. One is hurry. H-U-R-R-Y, not H-A-R. One is hurry. Hurry to do things. Because of this hurry to do so many things, one's mind is not at all composed and one is not able to adjust one's own life. That is number one, hurry. The next one is worry. Worry means anxiety or stress. And it was mentioned in the report that if hurry and worry doesn't get you, then the third one, which is curry, will definitely get you. And that curry is the junk food which people eat under this stress. I'm already stressed at workplace. I don't have time to eat. Then I rush to McDonald's or somewhere and I take that burger, which is, which is nothing but food which will lead to death at the end of the day, right? It contains meat which can lead to cancer. contains cholesterol, oil, everything. A classic recipe for a heart attack. Okay. So people eat this, all kinds of abominable things, and they ruin their life. So hurry, worry and curry. This was the outcome actually. And then, it was mentioned that nowadays, the problem with youth is too much addiction to WWW. Anyone knows what is WWW?
Yeah.
World Wide Web. No, that's not what I meant. World Wide Web is true, but the WWW here is wine, wealth and women. This is the problem of youth today. Okay. So, but those who chant Hare Krishna, they also enjoy this WWW. And what is our WWW? Worship without worry. That is the WWW of the devotees. So devotees seek a higher pleasure. That is the bottom line of the first verse that we saw. So someone asked Srila Prabhupada that you are chanting this Hare Krishna, but you people are not watching television. How you people are happy? So Srila Prabhupada, there is no recreation for you people. So Srila Prabhupada replied that Krishna consciousness, the process itself is a recreation. And Srila Prabhupada told him about the verse which says, what is the 9.2? Raja Vidya Raja Guhyam. Susukam Kartum Avyaya. Devotional service is joyfully performed. But for a materialist, he does not have access to this kind of pleasure and he does not even know what pleasure we are talking about. So definitely the second verse as it points out, the pleasure of the mad person is not the same as the pleasure of the devotee. Now we come to the second part. It's a story. It's going to be relatively light. But the verse is verse number 3. So it is said in verse number 3, in family life, the parents are always in anxiety about their home, children and reputation. But I have nothing to do with family life. I do not worry about my family and I do not care about honor and dishonor. I enjoy only the life of the soul and I find love on the spiritual platform. Thus I wander the earth like a child. So today, we want to talk about one such personality whose appearance day is on Tuesday. I haven't heard many lectures on this particular Vaishnava Acharya in ISKCON. Of course, I have had very limited exposure. I'm sure many of you must have heard it already. But since her appearance day is coming on Tuesday, we thought that we will talk a bit about this Acharya. So we are talking about none other than Her Holiness Ganga Mata Goswami and about her life. You heard about her? Now, hers was a life which is true to this verse, completely detached from family life and left her home very early in search of God and wandered around like an Avadhuta Brahmana. So Ganga Mata Goswami, she was born in Bangladesh, the old, what is it called as? East Bengal. It was called as East Bengal before the partition of India. So she was born in Bangladesh in a place called as Puntia. And this Puntia was being ruled by a king called as King Naresh Narayana. King Naresh Narayana was born a daughter who he named as Sachi. So, Ganga Mata Goswamini's birth name is Sachi or Sachi Devi. Okay, this is not the Sachi Devi, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's name. We are not talking about Sachi Devi. So, she, Ganga Mata Goswamini, born as Sachi Devi in 1601. Since her early childhood itself, she was a topmost devotee of the Lord. Her parents gave her very good education and she was very adept at poetry and grammar. But gradually, through her education, she found that mundane poetry and grammar are useless at the end of the day. As Lord Shankaracharya says in that, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Mudamate, Tam Prapte, Sannihite Kale, Nahi Nahi Rakshati, Dukhran Karane. At the time of death, all this grammar and poetry is not going to save us. It's only going to be the bhakti, which is going to save us. So she realized this and she started immersing herself endlessly in studying the scriptures to such an extent she got very good. She was very good at the scriptures. And so even as a young girl, she was very fascinated by Krishna consciousness. As she blossomed into her youth, every single boy who saw her was charmed by her beauty. Extremely beautiful to look at. But she was least attracted to all these supposedly rich, wealthy and handsome men. She was least attracted. Because her mind was constantly absorbed in Madan Gopal. So, one day her father started thinking about her marriage, to get her married to a well-settled kind of a person. And when Sachi came to know about this, she told her parents, "I will not marry a mortal man born of this world of death. If you find someone immortal, then I'll marry that person. You should not be mortal." So, the king and queen tried to convince her very much. "No, no, no, it's not realistic. You're living in a theoretical world. Try to understand practical reality." But she was very adamant. She was so adamant about this that her parents grew old and passed away. She did not budge from her position. She never married. When the king and queen passed away, the royal succession fell in her hands now. So she was responsible for corporate governance. So she accepted this responsibility of governance for some time, but her mind was not there in family life or in running some society, in administration. Her mind was not there. She wanted to get away from this mundane life. Therefore, one fine day, she left the governance of the kingdom to some trusted people and she walked away from the kingdom. Just imagine, the queen of the kingdom, or the king rather, just walking away, just walked away in search of a bona fide spiritual master. As soon as she started walking, within few days, she arrived at the holy land of Jagannath Puri. And every day she used to take darshan of Srila Jagannath Baldev and Subhadramai. So one day, as she was taking darshan of Lord Jagannath, she got an inner message within her heart which said, "Go to Vrindavan." This was the message she got from the Lord. So she commenced her journey towards Vrindavan. And she met the famous Acharya whose name is Haridas Pandit. For those of you who have not heard of Haridas Pandit before, Haridas Panditji was a great devotee of Lord Gauranga and Lord Nityananda. In fact, it is said during his time he was recognized as the greatest devotee of Lord Gauranga. And Haridas Pandit was a grand disciple of Gadadhar Pandit. Srila Gadadhar Pandit had a disciple called as Ananta Acharya, and Ananta Acharya had a disciple called as Haridas Pandit. And Sachi Devi went and met Haridas Pandit. After seeing the spiritual power and austerity of Srila Haridas Pandit, immediately Sachi Devi decided that this is my Guru Maharaj and I will take shelter from him. Now, in fourth canto, we are studying in Srimad Bhagavatam nowadays, in our Bhakti Vaibhav course, we are studying the pastime of Dhruva Maharaj, where Narad Muni comes and gives instructions to Dhruva Maharaj when he wants a higher planet. He wants the highest planet, bigger than that of Brahma. And Srila Prabhupada writes in the purports that when Dhruva Maharaj evinced this desire that I want to get I will do any kind of austerity to achieve a higher planet than Brahma, then Narad Muni as his spiritual master first tries to test him. He first tries to discourage him from doing that. Narad Muni says, "No, you are a very young boy now. This austerity sometimes you will not be able to do. Don't do it." And Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport that it is the duty of a spiritual master to test the sincerity of the disciple. Okay. So here also, when Sachi Devi approached with a desire to surrender to Haridas Pandit, the first thing he did was he tested his disciple. And he said that, "Sachi Devi, you are coming from a royal family. You are the queen, right? So all this devotional life, roaming around in Vrindavan like a Babaji, this is not meant for people like you. There is too much of austerity here. You will not be able to live as a poor devotee doing constant bhajan, there is no food, little food, no comforts, nothing. So you better stay at home. And you watch it from home itself. Don't come go to Vrindavan and all that. Now Satyadevi, again, like Guru Maharaj, was not discouraged. He said, no, I know, I want it. I want to attain self-realization, therefore I don't mind going to the austerities. And with resolute purpose, she continued with service to her Guru, followed by sincere bhajan. And gradually, because of the sincerity of her bhajan, she renounced all her material desires. So whatever opulent dresses and ornaments she was wearing, she gradually renounced all that. Now, when her spiritual master saw that she has progressed in this manner, he gave her the next instruction. He said, if you want to give up pride and fear, practice begging in Vrindavan. If you want to give up pride and fear, practice begging in Vrindavan as a renounced devotee. And then he gave her his blessings. She took her blessings and immediately went and covered her body with rags. Earlier she was wearing the dress of a queen. Now she is wearing rags. And she started begging from door to door. Gradually, because of this practice, this austerity, her body became frail and very weak. And her body was covered with soot, black soot. She used to sleep on the banks of the Yamuna, and in the morning, her service was, she used to clean as many temples as she could in Vrindavan. From temple to temple, she will go and sweep the temples and clean. She will also attend the Aarti in the morning, Mangala Aarti. And she will listen to all Srimad Bhagavatam lectures. Daily she will listen to Srimad Bhagavatam lectures. And then she will go to the bank of Radhakund and continue her incessant chanting of the holy names. So this was the second instruction which she followed, and her guru was very pleased with her and he agreed to initiate her. The third instruction her guru did not give directly to her, but her guru gave it to her god sister. She had a god sister whose name was Sri Lakshmi Priya. Now Sri Lakshmi Priya was known to chant 3000 holy names of the 300,000 holy names. 300,000 names of the Lord daily. Sri Lakshmi Priya, such a chanter she was. So her Guru Maharaj, Haridas Pandit, said that you go to Sachidevi and stay with her on the banks of the Radhapur. So her Guru Maharaj asked her god sister to accompany her to Radhapur and stay with her. So every day Sachidevi and Sri Lakshmi Priya would circumambulate the Govardhan Hill in Vrindavan. And one day, as they were doing this kind of an austerity, her spiritual master suddenly asked Sachidevi, let Lakshmi Priya continue there, you return, come back from Vrindavan. And you must now go to Jagannath Puri and then preach the message, the glories of Lord Chaitanya. Because by that time, most of the associates of Lord Chaitanya had gone home back to Godhead. So her spiritual master instructed her to go to Puri. And then, from that time onwards, Sachidevi started residing in Jagannath Puri. She came to Jagannath Puri, and when she came to Jagannath Puri, she started doing bhajan and giving Srimad Bhagavatam class in the house of none other than Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. She started living in his house. Now his house, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house, was dilapidated and it was actually crumbling. Nobody was taking care of that house. So, but she went there. And when she went there, she found beautiful Damodar Shalagrams, which were not lying unattended virtually in this house. And she started worshipping these Damodar Shalagrams with great love and care. She became so popular in her rending of Srimad Bhagavatam that people from far off cities used to come and just to listen her Srimad Bhagavatam class given by Sachidevi. And one day, as she was giving Srimad Bhagavatam class, the king of Puri, Mukunda Dev, personally arrived for her Srimad Bhagavatam class. The king of Puri arrived there, having heard about her glories. Now the king of Puri, when he heard that Sakhi Devi was a princess like me, and she has given up that kingdom which I am unable to give, and she has taken to this life of renunciation and living in this dilapidated quarters, he was moved by her austerity and humility. So he wanted to offer her something. He said, you must accept something from me. And he offered her a complete area on the banks of the Shweta Ganga, which is just outside of Puri, just on the outside of Puri. So he offered her that complete place, said that this place is yours, I'll write out a deed. The king of Puri saying that I'll write out a deed and give this entire land to you, of Shweta Ganga. But Sachi Devi was obviously not interested in any of this land and whatever. So she refused. But Lord Jagannath came to her in a dream and told her, no, you must accept. So she finally accepted that land. Now, as she was continuously chanting and doing a Srimad Bhagavatam class in Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's house, the day of Mahavaruni Snan came forth. Mahavaruni Snan is a day where it is very auspicious to go out and take bath in the Ganges. So when this Mahavaruni Snan came, Sachi Devi developed a keen desire to go and take bath in the Ganges. However, she remembered her Guru's order that you must not take a step outside Jagannath Puri. In fact, her Guru had just told her that you should go to Jagannath Puri, stay there and preach. But she took that order to mean that she should not step out of Jagannath Puri. And therefore, though her desire was there on the Varuni Snan day to go and take bath in the Ganges, she said, no, my spiritual master has not given me permission to do that, to step out of Puri, therefore I will not go. Once again, Lord Jagannath personally came in her dream and said, dear Sachi Devi, don't worry. Don't interpret your spiritual master's instruction like that, that you should not step out of Puri at all. I am giving you permission. You should go and take bath in the Ganges. And obviously this was the mid of the night. In the middle of the night this dream happened. And immediately in the middle of the night, Sachi Devi set out from the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya and went to take bath in the Ganges. Now, many of you must have heard the pastime of Srila Narottam Das Thakur on how when he entered the Padma River, because the love of God was invested in the Padma River by Lord Chaitanya, the moment Narottam Das Thakur stepped into the Padma River started overflowing and there was complete flooding in the area of Navadvip. Such a great Acharya he was. Now, what happened was, very similar thing happened when Sachi Devi stepped into the Ganges. As soon as she stepped into the Ganges started overflowing and there was flood everywhere in the entire Nilachal. And as Sachi Devi was taking bath in the Ganges, she found thousands and thousands of Dhamvasis, Puri Vasis, coming outside chanting loudly the names of Govinda. Hari! Hari! Continuously people were chanting this. Thousands and thousands of people were taking bath there. Now what happened was that the guards were sitting outside Jagannath Puri temple. Now Jagannath Puri temple is typically guarded very heavily because there is a lot of opulence inside the Jagannath temple, ornaments and so on and so forth. And this pastime of Sachi Devi is taking bath somewhere else in the Ganges outside. But suddenly the guards outside Jagannath Puri, they could hear commotion inside the temple in the midst of the night. And they could hear so many people are chanting Hari Hari and so many things are happening inside the temple. Right? And they were wondering, how come this kind of a noise inside? We have locked the temple. There is nobody that is supposed to be inside the temple except the deities. What kind of noise is this? And then they immediately informed the king of Jagannath Puri that there is noise which is coming inside this temple. So the king immediately orders them, you open the temple in the midst of the night. Now as the guards opened the temple, to their amazement, they saw that there was nobody inside the temple except the one woman who was none other than Sachi Devi. Sachi Devi, who was taking bath in the Shweta Ganga, found herself inside the Jagannath Puri temple carried by the Ganges. She was inside and the door was still locked. Obviously, the guards could not understand who this personality is, and the guards and the Pandas, they went to the king and said, there is a thief inside the temple. She has come to steal the ornaments of Lord Jagannath. And then the king was very angry. So he came down and then he saw none other than Sachi Devi. But the king was not sure about her intentions. Though the same king had given her the land of Shweta Ganga, still, how can Sachi Devi be alone? What is she doing here? Maybe she wanted some ornaments. The king had some kind of a doubt in his mind. So, he ordered his soldiers to arrest Sachi Devi and put her in the dark cell. So, Sachi Devi was arrested and she was put in the dungeon. Despite all this, Sachi Devi was very equipoised. She never got disturbed. She continued chanting the holy names of Hari. Obviously, no guesses for what will happen next. Lord Jagannath appeared in the dream of the king. And he said, "You rascal, you have imprisoned my devotee, Sachi Devi. Okay? You don't know who she is." And Lord Jagannath not only chastised him, but he said, "It is by my order that Sachi Devi has entered the temple of Lord Jagannath. It was my desire to personally wash her feet with the waters of the Ganges." Lord Jagannath saying this. Personally, he wanted to wash her feet, and that's why I arranged for this pastor. Now, when this was a little bit far out for the king of Kali, and the Lord said, "If you don't release her immediately, then you know what will happen to you." So immediately, the king of Puri got out from his slumber and he went. He ordered all his soldiers, "All of you come and release Sachi Devi." The Lord also gave another instruction. He said, "Not only you have to release Sachi Devi, but all of you and those who arrested her to take initiation from her."
What was the next instruction?
So then, obviously the king. Is the king of Puri, is not an ordinary person again. He's also a devotee. So he understood these instructions and immediately took initiation, surrendered to Sachi Devi. And from that day onwards, Sachi Devi's name became Ganga Mata Goswamini. Now, after initiation, the king offered her some Guru Dakshina, which she initially refused. But the king was very insistent that, "No, you must accept Guru Dakshina from me." So, with great humility, Sachi Devi or Ganga Mata Goswamini, she accepted the king's gift or Guru Dakshina only from the point of view that she can use that gift in Vaishnava Seva eventually. So, she accepted that daily there will be 2 pots of Jagannath Mahaprasadam which will be given to her, delivered at the house of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. 2 pots of Jagannath Mahaprasadam, 1 pot of vegetables, 1 remnant of Lord Jagannath's cloth and 160 kauris. Kauris means small conch shells. And it is mentioned that that service of offering all these items on a daily basis is still continuing in Jagannath Puri and it is being offered to the Samadhi of Ganga Mata Goswami. Now one day, after all this happened, as Ganga Mata Goswami was meditating, one Smartha Brahmana by the name of Mahidhara Sharma came to her, and this Smartha Brahmana, he was actually from a Mayavadi school of thought he was, and he came and he had come to offer ancestor worship on the banks of the Ganges. As soon as he met Ganga Mata Goswamini, there was a change of heart and he went to her and he started hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from her mouth. The moment he heard Srimad Bhagavatam from her mouth, all his Mayavadi philosophy inside him dissolved and he on the spot surrendered to Ganga Mata Goswamini and she initiated him. So she was one of his most prominent disciples, Mahidhar Sharma. And this Mahidhar Sharma eventually went on to become one of the biggest preachers of Krishna consciousness in Bengal. As she continued to perform her service, one day a Brahmana came from Jaipur in Rajasthan. A Brahmana came from Jaipur. His name was Chandra Sharma. Now this Brahmana was very poor and he had a deity by the name Sri Rasikaraya. Radha Krishna deity he had whose name was Sri Rasikaraya. So Rasikaraya himself in a dream one day came to this Brahmana and said, "You are so poor. You are not able to take care of me. You are not able to take care of yourself. Neither you are able to feed me anything. Okay? So you take me and then hand me over to Ganga Mata Goswami. So therefore, this Brahmana came all the way to meet Gangamata Goswami. Okay, and he said that, see, this is Rasika Raya deities, I am not able to take care of them, but now you take care of them, because I am a beggar. When Gangamata Goswami heard this, she said, you know what, even I am a beggar. Even I cannot take care of your deities. Okay, and I don't have anything to offer your deities, so please take your deities back. She refused to take the deities. But this Brahmana did not give up. What he did was, he placed these deities in the Tulsi garden of Gangamata Goswamini and went away. Now, the deities are there in the Tulsi garden and nobody was aware they are there. So when Gangamata Goswamini, when she took rest, at that time, the deities themselves, the deities came in her dream and said that the Brahmana has left us in your Tulsi garden. We are very hungry. Can you please feed us? This was the instruction. So immediately she got up from her sleep and then she went to the Tulsi garden in the midst of the night. She found these deities and then she took and gave them a nice bath. And then when she saw these deities, she found that the deities were completely effulgent. So after making a bath and a nice offering to the deities, she left the place, and after she came back after 5 minutes, she found that the deities had eaten everything, whatever she had offered. The plate was completely empty. That was the power of her devotion. Now from that day onwards, Gangamata Goswamini made her life, the deity worship, as her life and soul. And for 12 hours a day, she engaged in the deity worship. But slowly she was becoming very old. And as she was becoming very old, it was very difficult for her to worship the deities with the same standard of opulence. So therefore the Lord, knowing that his devotee has become old, always used to arrange somehow bhoga to come from here and there in the form of some rich and wealthy merchants. But Gangamata Goswami, she herself in her humility felt that I am not able to serve my deities, therefore I do not want to live in this world. I don't want this body which is of no use to my deities. And she evinced her desire to Sri Rasika Raya that I want to leave this world chanting your holy names. The Lord said, okay, he understood her mood and said, no problem, hand over me to one of your qualified disciples. So she had a very qualified disciple called as Vanamali Das, and she handed over Rasika Raya deities to Vanamali Das. At the age of 120, which is 1721 as per the Christian calendar, Gangamata Goswamini left her body, seeing the graceful three-folded bending form of Sri Rasika Raya, her beloved deities, and meditating on their lotus feet, she entered into the eternal pastimes. It is mentioned that this deity of Rasika Raya is still present in the house of Srila Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya next to the Shweta Ganga. So here is one personality, one Goswami, who epitomized this verse which we are seeing, left her family life in search of spiritual realization and eventually attained the lotus feet of Srila Rasika Raya. Her Holiness Gangamata Goswamini ki
jai,
Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Mantra Srimad Bhagavatam ki
jai,
Jai Nitai Gautama. Sorry for going over time, 8 minutes. Any comments or questions?
Where did you get the
pastimes of this Vaishnava? One Vaishnava website is there. BVML.org. BVML.org. It contains the past, about so many Goswamis, which are not found in the conventional books. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.